I think that the best strategy is to not do it by yourself. I have a personal philosophy, especially that is relating to Web3, where we're kind of all in it together. It's community-based, it's team-based, and the people that will be successful are the ones who will be learn how to work together in the most effective ways. So you have the artist, you have the director of the project. Because if you're a writer, you don't want to be doing dev, you don't want to be doing marketing decisions, you don't want to be doing working with the artist to get the art right. Like, you want to write, you're a writer.
Welcome to the Become a Writer Today podcast with Brian Collins. Here you'll find practical advice and interviews for all kinds of writers.
NFTs for writers. Are they a scam? And if not, how can you get involved? Hi there, my name is Brian Collins. Welcome to the Become a Writer Today podcast. Did you know that NFT was the Collins Dictionary Word of the Year for 2021? No, I'm not involved with the dictionary, but like many people, I was fascinated by NFTs during the year 2021 and into 2022. At first, I thought they were nothing more than pixelated images that people were spending an obscene amount of money on. But I quickly discovered that a lot of NFTs are more than that. They're passes for digital communities. They're a way of getting access to your favorite creator, and they enable creatives to connect with each other. They're also a new and emerging content format. And while many are rightly skeptical of a lot of NFT projects, and while many will go to zero, a few NFT projects like the CryptoPunks are here to stay. That said, the CryptoPunks sells for 6 and 7 figures, so it's out of reach of most investors and buyers. What's more, how is a writer supposed to get involved in something that looks like a pixelated image of a punk or an ape on the blockchain? That's what I wanted to find out. To learn how NFTs worked, I created my own NFT on OpenSea, which is the NFT marketplace, and I connected it to my Ethereum wallet. I didn't try and sell the NFT. It was basically something that I created just to figure out how the whole process worked. And I quickly found that much like self-publishing a book, anyone can create an NFT, but selling it and finding an audience is much harder. In other words, you can put trash up on an NFT marketplace, but that doesn't mean people are going to buy it. Similarly, you can take a book and self-publish it on Amazon, but that doesn't mean people are going to buy it either. So I bought a few NFTs from some well-known projects because I wanted to learn more about the space and the communities. And I couldn't quite get over the engagement that takes place in the Discord communities. I was also disappointed to find the space is rife with scammers. And in fact, if you're going to buy an NFT, remember that a lot of them can go to zero. And if you are going to get into the space, you really do need to protect your assets with a hardware wallet and also be wary of people who get in touch with you. That's something I talk about in this week's episode with Jessica Artemisia. She's a science fiction and fantasy author and also the creator of The Sovereignty, which uses NFTs on a blockchain as a new form of storytelling, community, and income. Jessica is one of the few writers that I've talked to so far who is using NFTs successfully as part of her writing career. So I wanted to find out how she's doing it and how writers can get involved today. My key takeaway from talking to Jessica is that we're still incredibly early. So if you find some of the language, terminology, and steps to buying NFTs confusing, don't worry, you're not alone. But now is a good time to learn about the space because NFTs are here to stay for creatives. And it'll be interesting to see how writers and authors use NFTs in future years to connect with their fans and their readers. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Jessica. If you do, please consider leaving a review on the iTunes store. You can also share the show with other writers because more reviews and more ratings will help more people find the show. And I'm also on Twitter at Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, J Collins. And let's go over to this week's interview with Jessica. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. Thank you.
I heard about your work on Joanna Penn's podcast, The Creative Pen, which I'd recommend any writer listen to. And around the time I listened to your interview with Joanna Penn, I was actually going down the rabbit hole of NFTs and Web 3.0 myself. And it feels like there's a disconnect between people who are involved in NFTs and the rest of the world on Twitter. So I was going to ask you about that. But before we do, could you give listeners a bit more of a flavor for who you are?
Sure. So I'm involved with several projects right now. My first project that I launched was back in early June of last year, and it's called The Sovereignty, which is a sci-fi and fantasy alternate world. And it's just a text-based written work with NFTs associated with it and AI, using art generated by AI. And then I'm also the writer for the manga of Saiba Gang, which is on Solana, which is another blockchain. The first one was on Ethereum, and then I'm also on Solana doing the manga writing. I'm also currently doing marketing for a project called Gunner Bros, which is a play-to-earn game, Gunner Bros and Babes. And it's a nostalgic retro gaming project that I'm really excited about. So, and we're also continuing the launch on the sovereignty with a new direction.
And so do you write the stories for the NFT projects like the sovereignty?
Yes. So for Sovereignty, I'm the writer. For Saiba Gang, I'm the writer. But also Gunner Bros has a writer too. He's actually, this is so cool. I'm really excited about this. He co-authored a book with Brandon Sanderson, and he's a sci-fi author, sci-fi fantasy author. And he's traditionally published. He has all of that going on. And so he's the author for the lore, for the story for Gunner Bros. So I'm not the writer on that one. I'm doing the marketing for that project.
So when I got into NFTs, like many people, I saw a lot of pixelated images, and I couldn't quite figure out why this is all images and art. And then I started thinking that surely there's a place for writers in Web 3.0 as well. So maybe could you describe how a writer can, I suppose, earn a living or get involved in an NFT project, or what a writer would do? Because it would seem like something that you would need coding skills for or design skills, and not necessarily an ability to tell a story.
Yeah. So I think that the best strategy is to not do it by yourself. I have a personal philosophy, especially that is relating to Web3, where we're kind of all in it together. It's community-based, it's team-based, and the people that will be successful are the ones who will be learn how to work together in the most effective ways. So you have the artist, you have the director of the project. Because if you're a writer, you don't want to be doing dev, you don't want to be doing marketing decisions, you don't want to be doing working with the artist to get the art right. Like, you want to write, you're a writer, right? Having all the other stuff can really take up a lot of space. So one of the main strategies that I recommend is becoming a writer for a project. I think 2022 is going to see a lot of that, because a lot of projects in 2021 failed because they failed to create meaning and connection between the community and the art. The lore or the story makes that bridge. So the lore writer or the lore master is a role in projects, like they're called PFP projects, profile picture projects.
Like the CryptoPunks.
Exactly. That's the original one. And that's why they're like so wild. Everybody wants the original. But yeah, so profile picture projects are really popular because it's a business model that works really well on Ethereum, given gas fees and all of this. It's just a business model that has worked and continues to work. I think there's other models, and can share that if we have time. So I recommend getting involved with that and then taking a piece. So I got a percent of like an $800,000 drop or $900,000 drop. I got a percent of that. This is more than I would make in 2 years, probably, as a best-selling author.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, I guess there's so many new projects launched every day. Mm-hmm. Like, do writers need to start spending time in Discord communities or on Twitter, or where do they go?
Yeah, and so that's the cool thing. So Twitter and Discord, absolutely. Networking, finding a community, sharing your writing, and then finding a team to launch with or get hired by. So that's one way to do it. The other option that people do is mint art or pages or things representing their work, but they don't have to, like, they have their writing public, and then as their fan base grows, so then fans will buy the NFTs, and that's how it's monetized, as opposed to just like selling the writing, which is, it's difficult because how do you build demand for something that people have to buy in order to know if they like it? And that's one of the biggest problems for new writers. So I think it's especially good for new writers to make their work public, let anybody read it, and then sell NFTs to monetize it.
Okay, so there's a few things there to kind of delve into. So to go back to the lore, let's say there's an NFT project with 10,000 unique characters or images, like the CryptoPunks, for example. Would each one of those characters or images have a backstory, or is it that the project as a whole has a story about its place in the metaverse?
Yeah, so it's the project as a whole. One of the fun things about being a lore master is that, so with Saiba Gang, what I did is I let the community give me the main characters. I'm like, choose one of the NFTs that you bought and tell me the character and I'll make them a main character. And this is the main character lore prompt. And then I did the side characters and villains lore prompt. And then I did the world building lore prompt. So the community gave me all of this information. And then I took it and turned it into a story.
And are the community voting on what they feel is, I suppose, the most appealing bit of information? Or are you just reviewing all of the submissions in a Discord thread and then working on it yourself?
They gave me, I don't know, hundreds of submissions. I chose my favorite ones and then they voted on those.
Okay, makes sense. Because I was going to say a lot of people in Discord communities, sometimes they're there for the project. Some are scammers.
Yeah.
So some are interested in the tech and some are just looking for a quick flip and some are looking for investments. So in other words, they're not all writers. So I'm sure you got given a lot of junk.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I mean, only the writers submitted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. And then the other way writers can get involved is if they have a project of their own and they want to create an NFT based on it. Are there any authors or writers that you know of who've done this successfully? Because when I went on to OpenSea, the NFT marketplace, I was going through the top 100 projects recently, that like there's examples of generative art, music, but there was very little from any authors or writers, at least that I was able to recognize.
Mm-hmm. It's not really authors working on their own project. There are some on Solana. I'm trying to remember the name. It's been a while since I looked. I don't remember the names, but Soul Gods is another one where they have a writer. And there's a lot of lore master roles, but there's not really like an author who says is the developer and the creator of the project around their IP.
How would a writer or an author or a project lead create an NFT based on something that's a piece of writing, like a book or like what are they doing that's worked basically? Is it just something as simple as words on a page that represents part of the book or is it something else?
So there are people that mint pages. I don't think that's one of the more standard routes because it's still an aesthetic medium right now. That's not always going to be the case, but right now it's an aesthetic medium. Also, to go back quickly, like I don't think there's any reason why authors can't create their IP based on their own work and they're in charge of the whole project. I just don't see that because there aren't a lot of writers that are really trying to break in right now. There are some, but not as many as artists. So artists are the ones really figuring out the business models and networking with people. I really encourage writers to come in and join and figure out who they can work with, what their options are, because they can definitely do that. That's what the sovereignty is. That's my project. I was doing it by myself originally, and it was too much work and I didn't have enough information. So now I have a team, I have a lot more information and I can run with it.
When I started getting active on NFT Twitter, quickly discovered there's a disconnect between people who are buying the NFTs and people who are creating them versus artists who have heard of NFTs but think that it's just wrecking their creative projects and their craft. And there's some nasty arguments in some of the Twitter threads. So what would you say to a writer who's, you know, quite skeptical of NFTs and thinks that it's just going to debase their writing in some way? The example I'm thinking of is there was an artist on Twitter who was saying that rather than paying several hundred dollars for an NFT, that's an example of generative art. Why shouldn't this investor or buyer just pay an artist directly instead of purchasing an NFT and then they could own a physical piece of art? And it would be less harmful for the environment. And it wouldn't be something that's just a JPEG that sits on their phone or on their computer.
Well, I mean, I think that why don't they? Why have they not ever? You know, I mean, how do they see the physical piece, right? It could be in a gallery, but galleries are, you know, there's gatekeepers to galleries. It's like, why not? Like, you can go ahead and do it and see if people do that. But all the artists I know are making, like for example, my friend Claire, she's a disabled woman from Kansas. She would never have an option for like a gallery show in Soho, but Snoop Dogg collected her art and showed it on Times Square. So that's kind of your market opens up infinitely. And, you know, people, they want the JPEG because it's expensive to, you know, ship the art. Like I'm an artist here in Morocco. I do art too. But the thought of like shipping my art to wherever, like China, or I mean, it'd be $1,000 just to ship the art, you know? So there's artists in Indonesia, there's artists in Thailand, there's artists in Kenya, and their whole world, the photographers are opening up. Oh, it's opening up so many doors for people around the world. It's opening up the entire market. Like, I was never an art collector. Now I own a piece from an artist who also Snoop Dogg collected. Her least expensive piece is like $12,000. And I have a piece by her. But I would never be an art collector before. It made me an art collector.
Yeah, I would say the same for me as well. The other thing that struck me is that if you're creating a piece of art today and selling it, or if you're writing a book, you get paid for the first sale, but you don't get paid for secondary market sales, whereas with NFTs you do, so you can earn residuals in perpetuity.
And you can sell the physical piece and you can sell the NFT separately as originals. There's no either, you don't have to, like, as Gary Vee, who's the one who onboarded me to this space, he's like, we don't need to think in terms of either or. It's both and. You know, we have this whole new space. I know artists that have made more in the last 6 months than they've made in 20 years. And that's the general case. There's a lot of people that are struggling too. It's not like there's going to be a market easily found for every single artist. But, you know, the art market has exploded. And that means there's so much more money in it now. So a lot more people, and there's no gatekeepers. There's no middlemen. So it's all going to the artists.
That makes sense. The other thing that struck me is that some of these NFTs are passes in a way. So the image represents the NFT, and the NFT actually gives you access to other people involved with the project, or an exclusive community, or in-person events, or, well, at the moment it's quite difficult to have in-person events, but so it's, the image is just a representation of what the NFT is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, too, as an artist, you can create a community around you that you're in contact with every day, and that you get to serve and connect with every day, and your community connects with your community, like your people who love your art connect with each other too. So it's kind of beautiful in that way too. So you're building your buyers become your community, and you're all working together to kind of grow this project. Because, and that's another thing that's really interesting, is that they become a buyer in your business, basically. They're not just a buyer though, they're an owner. So they have an incentive also to raise your profile as an artist or as a writer. It's an owner economy, ownership economy. So instead of consuming, and it's not like consumption and production, it's everyone's an owner in varying degrees. There's an intersection of interests between the writer or artist and their community to elevate the profile and the value of the project.
You mentioned either or a few moments ago there, Jessica. I thought that was a great point. I came across Damien Hirst's Currency. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
It's out of the price range of most people. It's all for millions of dollars. But apparently the NFTs, the digital versions, correspond to 10,000 real world projects locked away in a mysterious vault in London. And at some point, owners can just burn the NFT, which is like the digital version of destroying it, or they can choose to destroy the real world piece of art. In other words, they're asking which they feel has more value.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Thought that was quite a creative way to answer the reservation that many artists have about NFTs. Now, that project, I think, sold for 7 figures. Mm-hmm. But even for buying newly launched or newly minted NFTs today, there's still quite a barrier of entry. You have to set up a Coinbase account or another exchange, send over your euro or dollars, buy Ethereum, transfer it to a MetaMask wallet, which is a wallet you use to connect to an NFT marketplace. Mm-hmm. Then you have to sign some transactions on your wallet. And all of this costs gas, which can add up. So in short, it can cost you a couple of $100 to buy your first NFT. And even when you go to buy your first NFT, that can cost, you know, it's not cheap. You're not going to buy one for $10 or $15. It can cost quite a bit more because of the cost of using the Ethereum blockchain, which you mentioned. So in other words, like NFTs, do you think they're prohibitively expensive? And if not, what else could somebody do?
Yeah, I don't, because Ethereum is one blockchain. And it's kind of the one that's been very dominant in 2021. But I think that there are some major contenders in 2022. One of them is Solana, which the transaction fee is negligible, maybe like a dollar or two or something like that. And then there's Tezos, which the transaction fee is like pennies. And you can mint on like object.com or on Hickenunk. It's a really weird spelling. Hen. They call it Hen, the Hen Network. So I mint for, I don't know, a couple of pennies, and then I sell things for $5.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's much more. I haven't tried that at all. That's much more accessible and affordable.
Yeah, definitely. And what's cool is that you can sell a page, like a poem or anything really, in like, you can sell 1,000 of them, and each one is $5.
And is there demand there? Are there users on those marketplaces?
Yeah. And I love actually Tezos. So I'm not a big fan of Ethereum personally. I'm very much about inclusion and especially access for the traditionally excluded geographically and socially and economically and politically. So to me, it's one of the reasons I love blockchain is the possibility of a sea change in the way that society is structured and how the way that society is currently structured, it's very rigid in who gets what. It's very difficult to have, I mean, maybe one person can break through that system, but as a whole, you're not going to find, I live in Morocco, for example, you're not going to find a whole bunch of Morocco, like a whole category of Moroccans just suddenly changing everything and like becoming rich or whatever, because the system is very rigid. But this system changes that. So, and that's why I'm like not so big fan of Ethereum, because it keeps that entrenched with the prohibitive gas fees. Gas is the transaction. Could be $200, could be $300. Ridiculous. That's why Tezos, Solana, possibly Near protocol blockchain. There's a lot out there. AVAX, which is Avalanche. There are a lot of others that you can mint on and build a following. And Tezos is really amazing because it's basically like the artist neighborhood in the city. And I believe it's going to be gentrified, but right now there aren't like whales on it. The whales are the big investors who spend like $800,000 on like an ape. But you do have all of the artists buying from the other artists, and the poets buying from the artists, and the artists buying from the poets, and you know, the poets buying from the poets, and you have this amazing crypto writers community, which I'm friends with them, and it's so welcoming too. It's one as people in NFTs notice, it's like it's the most warm and friendly and open and welcoming community anywhere. I hated being online before I was in the NFT community.
So I'm looking at object.com. Is that the Tezos NFT marketplace? OBJKT?
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. And I haven't heard of that till you mentioned it. Yeah, I've used OpenSea a bit. I mean, it's still incredibly early for the space. I read a news story recently that said OpenSea had only several hundred thousand users. So I'd imagine that'll change once Coinbase launches their marketplace, which will probably be out at the time of this interview.
Oh, and the other thing too is that with AI, it's another piece that's really great for writers, is that you don't have to create the art. You can create the writing and then create the art with a click and a couple of words that represents your writing.
Okay, makes sense. So I also came, when I got into the space, I saw a lot of NFT creators and those in the space using pseudonyms and also using .eth on their URLs. So what would you say are the reasons that so many people use pseudonyms rather than their real identity?
That's kind of a throwback to crypto. I'm not like the original crypto kind of anonymous people wanting privacy. If you don't have a big desire for privacy, I mean, I think if you're maybe from a traditionally excluded or traditionally like abused group, it might be great to have that separation from that identity. So you're free from that identity. You can have any identity that you want. So you're not kind of like, you're not stuck with what you've been given at birth, the script you were given at birth. You can manifest as anything you want online. And that's part of the problem, because people turn out to be horrible people, trolls and scammers. But you can also be like an octopus or a unicorn. Like, you don't have to be like a white woman from the Midwest that's like middle-aged or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, because those categories just, they don't have to apply. And so for some people, they just don't feel that those represent them. And they don't want to carry them with them into that world. So, yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that about reinventing yourself online. I thought it was more to do with privacy, I guess. And
privacy is a big one, you're right, though.
Mm-hmm. And keeping people safe if they have lots of investments from scammers. So the other thing I came across is like a lot of those in the space are using the .eat addresses. Would you be able to explain what that is?
Yeah, so that's just related to the wallet, a wallet that you use. You can send things to that wallet. So mine is just artemisia.eth. So you can send me crypto. You can send me ETH if you want. Don't send me NFTs. I don't know what, I'm not going to look at them. I'm not going to sell them, you know, because there's a lot of scammers also will send NFTs to wallets that like, if you try to sell them or if you try to burn them, they interact with the contract and then they just wipe out your wallet. So anyway, side note. Yeah. So there's the whole kind of online identity that comes with that. I haven't dug very deep into that, but mostly what I use it for is it's my Ethereum address. So it's the address for my wallet.
Mm. Yeah, I was setting up an ENS domain yesterday. It doesn't seem to be possible, though, to use it as a traditional URL that would go to a site. Perhaps I was doing something wrong.
No, it's just that like Google or whatever, like they just don't recognize those as domain name servers or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know the technical.
You also mentioned scammers. So what steps would you recommend people follow to keep themselves safe if they're going to get into the space?
Yeah. So first of all, I've never, ever click a link in a DM on Discord. Just don't ever. Even if it's from me, don't do it because it's not me. Like if you think it's the owner of Bored Ape Yacht Clubs, it's definitely not, no matter what. It's like, even if you think it's the support, like let's say you're in a project and you have an issue and then someone says, and then a DM shows up and is like, I'm support for this project. Let me help you. They're not. They're not support for that project. They're going to socially engineer you to give them your seed phrase for your wallet and then take your wallet. So never do anything in DMs with people and, you know, your wallet or anything. It's always good to have a wallet where you keep your valuables and your money, your crypto and your NFTs, and a wallet, a separate wallet that you mint, which means buy NFTs from. You never quite know, even if the project is legitimate, it could be compromised by an outside party. There's that. And what else? Be aware of like what kind of projects would be a rug. If you're trying to be a crypto investor and using NFTs and flipping them, like it's a wild game. It's the Wild West. I just wouldn't recommend doing that. But if you're on Tezos and you're buying and trading on object on the legitimate marketplaces like Object or Hen, or if you're on Solana through Olaplex or something like that, you know, and you're using the marketplaces and you know you're going to be fine. I've been in it for 7 months and I've never clicked a link. I think I might have once and been like, oh, what am I doing? Don't do that. And I like immediately go back. Just never do that. That's the main thing. 99% of scams happen because someone clicks the link in a Discord because they think it's Gary V's team talking about a secret mint. It's not. I guarantee it.
There is no secret mints. But what's Hen? Could you give me the Hen URL again? I'm not familiar with that one either.
HICETNUNCART.
Okay, I'll put the link in the show notes. Thanks.
So the link is actually .art. HICETNUNC or HICETNUNC.art. HICETNUNC.art. Oh, and I wanted to mention another thing too, is that if you're looking for a link to a project, go on Twitter, find a verified account that other people you're following are following, and then use their link. Because if you like, oh, I'm going to go find Collabland. Collabland is like one of the bots that they use in Discord to manage communities of NFT holders. Anyway, I was just looking for what that bot today. I'm like, I'm going to Google it. And then I Googled it. And then I'm like, Collabland? Okay, right. Okay, right. This is the very first hit you get on Google is a scam site. I'm like, okay, what am I doing? And then I went to Twitter. I found the right link because I went to Collabland NFT Twitter profile. And there's where you're going to find all your links. Don't Google any NFT project or crypto links. Just find them on Twitter.
I was saying the same even for using OpenSea. It's possible to come onto a project that you think is the actual project and it's not. It's a scam.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, another way to look at a project, and especially artists too, because a project with like 500 NFTs in it and like 23 owners, it's obviously a scam if it's a 10K project and there's probably thousands of owners, you know? So, you know, they're not going to mint on some like little tiny separate contract or something like that.
That's good advice. Jessica, where can people learn more about you or your work or get involved with the projects?
Well, okay. So I keep a list of all my links on jessartemisia.com. My writing is there. Cyber Gang is there. Sovereignty, which is kind of in a sleeper mode right now while I launch these other projects. My art is there. So yeah, I have some manifestos and some PDFs and some poetry and all of this other stuff. So jessartemisia.com is where you can find it all.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did, please consider leaving a short review on the iTunes store or sharing the show on Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening. More reviews, more ratings, and more shares will help more people find the Become a Writer Today podcast. And did you know for just a couple of dollars a month, you could become a Patreon for the show? Visit patreon.com/becomeawritertoday or look for the support button in the show notes. Your support will help me record, produce, and publish more episodes each month. And if you become a Patreon, I'll give you my writing books, discounts on writing software, and on my writing courses.